We are in interesting times. We've got protesters in the streets of Beijing and Shanghai calling for President Xi's ouster. It's reminiscent of Tiananmen Square. You've got the situation in Iran where those protests continue to be ongoing. And then we've got this crazy thing where the Biden administration, who certainly hasn't done much to encourage domestic drilling, is giving Chevron license to go in and expand its programs in Venezuela, basically softening the very tough sanctions that the Trump team had put on Maduro and his regime just a few short years ago. What can be achieved there? And could it, this course change, if you will, maybe lead to fewer surges at the border? Wanted to connect with Steve Biegun on all of this and more. He is the former U.S. Deputy Secretary of State under Mike Pompeo, now a professor at University of Michigan. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Guy. How you doing?
Very good. This is being characterized as capitulation by some, rolling back sanctions. Others are saying it's a course correction because the sanctions weren't having their intended effect. What do you make of it, and what could be achieved here?
Well, just to start with your comment that you live in interesting times, you left off Russia's stuck in a losing war in Ukraine, and North Korea is acting up as well. It's things are hopping all over right now. The Venezuela announcement certainly is good for Chevron. Chevron's going to make a lot more money being able to sell Venezuelan oil. Venezuela is one of the largest oil deposits in the world, and it is happening in parallel to talks that are happening right now in Mexico City between the Venezuelan opposition and the government on what one would hope was a transition to restore democracy in Venezuela, although I wouldn't hold up hopes very high. But what continues to puzzle me is that, if it's about oil, we have a lot of oil. It's here in the United States of America, and I continue to be confounded by why the Biden White House won't make it easier for American companies to drill oil here in the United States.
Or do both if there are foreign policy aims in Venezuela. Now, apparently, they're also releasing some seized assets of Venezuela's into a humanitarian fund, I think, to be administered by the United Nations to help the Venezuelan people. What is that naive to think that that money will actually benefit Venezuelans?
Well, that was the deal that was brokered this week by the Venezuelan opposition and the Venezuelan government to create this central fund that would be neutrally monitored and administered to provide help to the Venezuelan people. And I do have to say that there's a humanitarian imperative here too, Guy, that we have to think about. The Venezuelan people have suffered enormously under the Maduro regime. There's more refugees from Venezuela than there are from Syria. In fact, it's the largest refugee population in the world right now. And as you pointed out a moment ago, many of them are so desperate, they're making their way all the way up the isthmus of Panama through Central America to the southern border of the United States. These people are just desperate. And the ones that remain in Venezuela, the vast majority of them are surviving under less than $2 a day. And so this aid is desperately needed. It's going to require a careful monitoring and careful administration. But, I would say your point about maybe we could do both, I think that's right. We can respond to the humanitarian necessity. We can try to facilitate a transition back to democracy in Venezuela, but we should do it from a position of strength with our own energy resources being produced
right.
as well.
So if we are successful in maybe helping the Venezuelan economy with investments like Chevron's, and this humanitarian aid is there, are we being too optimistic to think that the 7 million people that have left Venezuela might return?
I think optimism is a real stretch in practically any element of this. Maduro is determined to hang on to power, and he's a true dictator. He's probably a little nervous right now seeing his backers in China and in Russia facing their own challenges, and maybe he's decided this is the time to cut a deal to save his own skin. In our administration 2 years ago, up until 2 years ago, our goal was to help the opposition push Maduro aside. So I think optimism may be a little bit misplaced here. It's just going to require us to watch very, very carefully.
Well, I mean, everybody is looking to the southern border and hoping that at some point we can reverse that surge.
You can slow it. You can try to improve the controls on the border, but people rarely go home. And I think the brutal reality here is that once those people settle outside of Venezuela, it's very unlikely they're going to return.
As we see this backlash in China, I don't ever recall since Tiananmen Square seeing any protests at that level over this, in their terms, zero COVID policy. How significant are these protests, and how disruptive could they be to our economy and the supply chain?
Well, you're absolutely right, Guy. If you are less than 32 years old, you've never seen anything like this. This is the biggest protest since Tiananmen Square. And while the size of the protests on the ground themselves aren't yet that big, in some cases maybe a few hundred, maybe at most a couple of thousand people, it's the breadth of it. It's across. There's 80 universities across China right now, the entire breadth of the country, which there are major student uprisings happening. There are 9 of the largest cities in China, including Beijing, Shanghai, Nanjing, Chongqing, Wuhan, Guangzhou. All the major cities are facing protests right now. The Chinese security apparatus is formidable, but they are going to be stretched very, very thin. And it's a big test for Xi Jinping, who is just reappointed to a new 5-year term. If he cracks down on the Chinese people with violence right now to end these protests, he faces a very rocky tenure.
Gordon Chang went so far as to predict today that he sees the collapse of the party in the next year or two or three. Is that wishful thinking?
In year 2000, with the outbreak of the COVID pandemic in China in January, February of that year, it's clear to us, and I was still in office then, it's clear to us that Xi Jinping, the leader of China, viewed that as an existential threat to the Chinese Communist Party's hold on power, that their legitimacy comes from their ability to run the country in an orderly way, and they have absolutely fumbled how they've handled the COVID exit. You know, the same time that they're facing these protests over draconian measures to restrict the Chinese people, they're also simultaneously facing the largest outbreak of COVID they've faced since the beginning of the pandemic. This is a real dead end for Xi Jinping. Whether that leads to the collapse of the Communist Party, Gordon's probably out a little bit farther than I would get, because they have a lot of tools to repress the Chinese people.
But their vaccines are garbage, and their policies. I mean, I didn't realize that if you get COVID there, your family is sent away to a camp, and you are sent to the hospital. And the return is not guaranteed.
Up until a couple of weeks ago, if you were in the same restaurant, 100 people in a restaurant, you were in the same restaurant as one person who subsequently tested COVID, you were automatically put into 14-day quarantine. They've just relaxed that, but they recognize the Chinese people are done with these rules.
Well, and they're expressing it, as you said, in ways that we haven't seen since Tiananmen. And we can only hope that we don't see the same level of brutal crackdowns that we saw there. But it is encouraging to see, nevertheless.
You mentioned the crackdown in Iran, too. You know that this Iranian regime has already killed more people on the streets than the Shah did in 1978, 1979, when he lost power in Iran. That's something to think about. This regime under the Ayatollah has mistreated the Iranian people even more severely than the Shah of Iran, who was overthrown in 1979.
Well, I think they arrested the Ayatollah's niece today, even. So they are showing little patience for what's going on there. And we're going to see it full force on the pitch tomorrow in the World Cup as well, as we face down with Iran.
Unbelievable.
And that came to a head today at the press conference, too, which is I thought our captain of our U.S. team did a great job answering some of these just provocative questions. Steve, always good to talk with you, and we'll hope for the best, but be prepared for something less than that.
Thanks, Guy.
All right. Take care. Steve Beegan, 414 on Newstalk 760 WJR. When we come back, we had some savings from auto reform. How much of it might we give back as we try to take care of the people who were left out of benefits as a result. The consequences of auto reform and fixing it, next on The Guy Gordon Show.